Hello everybody and welcome to the Black Spin Global Podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah guys, welcome to the latest episode. Lucy, we've got a very special guest joining us.
Yes, very excited.
been basically, yeah, anticipating or like looking forward to this episode like for the longest time. And yeah, I'm glad to say we were joined by Tamani Carriol, the Guardian. How you doing, Tamani?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for joining us on this lovely Sunday evening. So yeah, we're basically gonna do a normal show, but we will have a segment dedicated to Tamani, basically just, you know, finding out about his time in the industry and some of his favorite things, and yeah, just his background basically. So yeah, stay tuned for that. But yeah, our first thing that we're going to be talking about, I say thing, how we always go, it's a short roundup of like the events in tennis recently. So it's been, obviously with what's going on in the world right now, it's been a heavy time like news wise but on the tennis side, there have been like some exciting developments, I guess you could say. I don't know if that's fair to say. So yeah, one of the things I think the main thing to really talk about tennis wise is Roger Federer basically calling it quits on 2020. Lucy's goat.
Who knows? Well, just for now, just right now, he's not really my goat because I don't really like his behavior.
Let's not backtrack.
He's on timeout for a minute. He's on timeout, but like everyone on Twitter is saying, like, you know, last time he got injured, he won a slam right afterwards. So maybe this is a sign. I'm telling you, Federer is always ahead. Can you see this? Like, coronavirus came, and then he had the surgery. Like, he knew what he was doing. So I guess he's still my goat, but or maybe not. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, we can't play any tennis, so I guess it benefits him. I just hope that by the time tennis is back, he's 100%.
Yeah. He tweeted out, I can't remember what day it was exactly, but
Wednesday or something.
Was it Wednesday? Yeah, just saying that he had surgery on that. Is it the right knee?
Yeah,
the right knee. And that, yeah, basically he's that's him for the year. So he'll be back for the start of the 2021 season.
You know what? I feel like even knowing players like Federer, I feel like even if he wasn't injured, I don't think he would have come back this year.
Really?
No, yeah, I agree with that. I think because, like, I mean, a lot of this is going to be, like, restricted travel. Even, I think, past the US Open, and he has a big family. And
exactly.
Yeah. So I think he was already, like, skeptical before he pulled the plug on it. And, like, as you said, Lucy, like, if there was any period in, like, the past 20 years that you... is a good time to have a surgery, it's now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, he's really, like... enjoying this in a way, but yeah, I really think that, you know, this is I feel like if you're, maybe it's a bad thing to say, but I feel like if you're injured or you don't feel like playing right now and you're just enjoying downtime, then this is the greatest time.
Lockdown
life. You know what I mean?
No,
yeah, especially for tennis players who are, you know, continuously traveling up and down and stuff, like, you know, a lot of them are saying this is the first time they've been able to stay home for the longest. Like, can you imagine, you bought a house cash and you can't even stay home because you're traveling up and down. So, but yeah, I mean, good luck to him. I hope he recovers well and he's coming back next year with a slam, please, because he's getting old. Yeah. You know, so
he's already old.
Oh, wow. He's already old, but I had to give it to him though for still being here, because who would have thought, you know? But yeah. But yeah, good luck.
Because how many slams is he currently on?
20.
Okay.
Yeah, 20.
And that's the most, obviously, in the men's game.
Yeah. At the moment, Nadal has like 19, isn't it?
Yeah. So Nadal's just one behind, basically.
Yeah. One behind. 17.
Wow. Okay.
17 now.
Because they're the next two I want to speak about. So Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic. Because they've, I don't know if you've seen, but there were like interviews that they both did, like obviously separately. And I got the impression that they both weren't keen on the US Open. I don't know what your like views are like on that, Tamini. Like, if you kind of see where they're coming from, or
so I think most of the top players are not keen on it. I think, but Novak and both Nadal and Djokovic, their reasons were kind of different. Like, Nadal's was because he's been I mean, he's been at home the whole time and he's been talking about how, you know, he's been thinking a lot about the world and that tennis is not necessarily on his mind. And with all like the issues with the health issues in the US, you know, for that reason, he's kind of skeptical about going. And I think that's like very, that's reasonable and fine. And I thought, no, cool. That's, whereas Djokovic is a bit different. Like he's, it's because he's, it's because he, I'm trying not to laugh.
No, no, you have to laugh. You have to laugh at what he thinks. Go on.
But yeah, it's because obviously, like a lot of the situation, what the proposal that US Open have given, it's very restricted. You know, he was saying, oh, I won't be able to go to Manhattan. I won't be able to have one.
His team.
I'm going to keep on laughing.
His team.
But yeah, his team, yeah, they can only go with one coach. And so for those are the like issues for Djokovic. And I mean, on one hand, like it's a lot of people think it's unreasonable because obviously like it shows like the division between the top players and the bottom lower rank players. That, you know, top players have their big teams, lower rank players, that's how, you know, some, a lot of players just go with their coach or with two people.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, I can understand though, like some of it, like Djokovic is 33 and Nadal is 34. So if they just think that they need a physio, like, you know, if you're playing best of five or even best of three matches, like it's fair to say, oh, I need someone here to keep my body in shape because I'm old as hell.
Yeah.
But like, if it's, but the, I don't know, it's just like with all of them, like there are just so many different reasons why, and that's why it's so hard. It seems like so difficult for this tournament to go ahead.
Because do you not to cut you, do you think the French Open then, do you think they're more open to competing in the French Open as opposed to the US?
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
Yes, I think it's partly because they're all, most of the top players are European. Yeah. So, and Europe seems to be like New York is behind. You know, Europe seems to be opening up a bit more.
Yeah.
Like if they don't go to New York, then they'll have maybe Madrid, Rome, and then Roland Garros in a row. I don't know. Like it's still hard to say what those kind of restrictions will be because there surely will be some, or there will be some. So it's still like hard to say.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. It's brilliant background because I didn't really like kind of like deep it like that, as in give it that much thought. But yeah, like, after hearing all that, like it does make sense. And even just the whole like logistically, like Europe, US, two completely different what's the word I'm looking for, continents. So obviously it makes more sense to kind of stay closer to home. And it's understandable, like, yeah, these players not being particularly keen to travel to America right now, especially with what's going on as well. We're going to touch on it later on, but like the whole unrest, like in that country at the moment around like Black Lives Matter and just tensions in general. So no, that makes sense.
I was going to say, sorry. And I think it's like what the US Open, the proposal, I think it's fair that, like, there's been criticism, I'm sure you've seen, from like Kyrgios and other people, like they shouldn't, they're just doing it for money. But I think it's fair for them to try, and they've put forward like a really restrictive plan.
Because I was going to say that there was the it's like 400 plus people like in that conference call. Was that just men's players?
Yeah, that was just the men's players. Like the women, I think they have like a weekly Zoom, so they like, I think they like addressed it afterwards.
Okay.
So this one was just the men, and so there was a lot of different opinions and a lot of people who weren't liking it. And
wow, yeah. So no one's like on a like a general, no one's really on the same page basically.
Not at all. I mean, even like for the people who don't want it, everyone has a different reason. I mean, there are many different reasons why. And so
No, interesting.
See, this is what I said at the beginning, that we should just cancel everything for the rest of the year, because to me, I feel like it doesn't really make sense. Do you get what I mean? Like, not saying I mean, I don't back Djokovic at all about what he's saying. Like, more of like Nadal's reason, for example, that's more reasonable. Not only because of the health issues, we need to keep in mind as well that Nadal actually doesn't even have a court in his own home, which till this day, I don't really understand how someone, which is really amazing.
He's got a massive yacht though. Have you seen his yacht?
They have serious tennis money. So it was very surprised to hear that. But I feel like, because there's so much going on and so much uncertainty, because you don't, like, we don't have the answer. Like, we don't even know what's going to happen within a month. Like, yes, like they're saying, okay, yes, this and that is open, but you don't know what's going to happen. Is going to be a second wave? Are we going to be locked down again? Are we going? So I feel like it's really difficult. So that's why I feel like, you know, all these little things that they're doing, like what Djokovic is doing at the moment in Serbia, for example, that could be all right. Or like, stuff like that, or like bring European players together in Europe, or American players,
yeah,
or whoever's
going
close
on, to
America.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or whoever is willing to fly to America, then go ahead. Or American players come over to Europe and stuff, since it's much safer. But the thing is, I just wish they didn't ask the big players these type of questions, because I feel like people underestimate the influence that they have into them making a decision. So if you have two of the big players saying, I don't want to play, believe me, US Open is going to be like, all right, we're going to cancel it. Do you get what I mean? It's just like how allegedly, you know, the French Open people called Nadal first when they said that they were going to move the dates, and they didn't call anyone else. I don't know if that's true.
King Rafa, the only person they consulted.
So I really wish like they didn't really ask them, because, you know, first of all, they can afford not to play for a year or two. They can, you know, they can all top players. So I just wish they didn't really ask them. But again, honestly, because of how uncertain we are, I feel like when it comes to actual Grand Slams, you know, I feel like we should just leave it and just let it into like small little tournaments and stuff, and then see how next year goes.
Nice. It's a valid point, I guess. I don't like the idea of like shutting down the year completely, just because I hear what you're saying, Lucy, about...
We've been fine about this for so long.
These are really uncertain times. And like you said, we don't know if there's going to be a second wave like any time. So, but in saying that, I think it's important we kind of like take advantage of, well, yeah, this time we have now, where, like you said, look at Djokovic and his tour in Serbia right now going on, that Adria tour or something. I don't know if so there's actually like they've got an audience, like literally a stadium packed full
they're
of
literally
people.
Even playing right now, like, I think Sasha's the one that's playing right now.
So I'm saying, and obviously that's Europe, like you guys said as well. So like in terms of being further along in, you know, restriction lockdowns being just basically further along, I understand Europe is literally there. But it's difficult because tennis is a world sport. Like the tournaments are all over the world.
So do you feel like they should just go ahead with the US Open?
I don't know. Like maybe there should be like a decision where they say, you know what, we're going to just maybe compete in Europe. Like we'll just have tournaments in Europe. And if you can't...
They won't. Americans. Americans, they'll be like, no. They won't even pick another state. Yeah, learn even a whole another continent. They'll be like, no.
Yeah,
these Americans are crazy.
I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see, man. But I don't want to spend too much time on that because that's a bit like doom and gloom.
I was like on the French Open, like that they've been, their messaging has been a lot like more positive, saying that, oh, we're not just thinking about behind closed doors. We want to have crowds. But I mean, I just, as you said, like who knows, like what, how things
cap
because
I don't
they've been very shady, like,
I, first of all, I don't, sorry guys if you're French, apologize, but I don't trust French people in general. Number one. And number two, French Open is the most, they're the most ghetto out of all of the slams. It's not between US Open and French. So with the way that they literally went through all of this, I don't believe anything that they say. But the only reason why I think they have more luck is because France at the moment, like they, for example, I think tomorrow they're opening restaurants and stuff, because I've got a lot of friends in France and they basically back to normal. So I think by, you know, October or end of September, whatever they're doing it, you know, they might actually, you know, you never know, might be able, and I might actually even be there myself when I'm slagging off right now, but you know, who knows?
Incredible, Lucy, well done,
girls.
Shall
see.
Okay, cool. So yeah, moving on to the next segment, which isn't exactly, it's not easy to talk about, let's just be real. So it's the whole Black Lives Matter movement, and like tennis is kind of, I say tennis, ATP and WTA's like reluctance to kind of get involved in that. I don't know if that's fair to say. I've obviously, we all know that literally that's the topic, or like the main topic on the news agenda at the moment, like, and that's throughout the world, like Black Lives Matter, with protests going on around the world, like not just in Europe, not just in America, but in Europe, Asia, and yeah, literally the whole world is talking about it. So I kind of took issue with the ATP and WTA and just their like
Eugene was furious.
I was annoyed. Definitely, I was annoyed. Like, they were just so slow to kind of like respond, and they almost like ignored. They tried to ignore it, really and truly, because it wasn't until Francis Tiafoe put out that video, the rackets. What it's actually called.
Rack it down, hands up.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And like such a powerful, like just a powerful like image, like in terms of all the players that like he managed to kind of get hold of. Like, so you had Gael Monfils, Joe Wilfred Tsonga, a lot of Americans obviously, so like Sasha Vickery, Chanda Rubin, like a lot of like figures in tennis, black figures Serena. In tennis. Obviously Serena indeed. Heather Watson too, indeed. Shout out to Heather Watson. But yeah, like I said, so he posted this video. It was late on a Sunday evening. The ATP and WTA's like official like Twitter accounts, they didn't actually like acknowledge it or like retweet it or like it until late Monday evening. And I just thought that was like really telling. Like, and before then, like the players have been speaking out. We spoke on our last episode, Lucy, about Coco Gauff and like Naomi Osaka, how they've been so outspoken and like willing to like use their platform to kind of like basically address the issues, and that these are young athletes. Felix Auger-Aliassime, he put something out as well on his Instagram, and like I don't know how you feel to me about this, because I'm interested to get your thoughts, but I said on our last episode that I kind of resent the fact that black tennis players, especially young ones, have to basically speak about these issues. Like, why can't they just focus on the sport they play, as in their profession? But I said to Lucy again, like, it's, and this is now what the world is kind of waking up to, like, when you're black, there's so much you have to like contend with. Like, you can't just focus on one thing, because racism is actually a real thing. Like, it's and it affects people, or I say black people anyway, it affects us from, you know, birth pretty much. And it's something now people are like kind of waking up to. But yeah, I'm interested to kind of hear your thoughts, like, Samili. I don't know how you felt about the ATP and WTA and players in general too, like non-black players.
Yeah. So that was like, I mean, you said a few things. Like, first of all, like with the video, I think the most like powerful and smart thing about it was that it was not just Americans. Like, it was, as you said, like people from all different countries, all different continents, and like the point was that it's an issue for everyone and everyone on tour. And for that reason, like, I agree that it was very frustrating. Like, with the tour in particular, they waited, and you could clearly see that they probably had meetings and then decided on a joint. You know, you saw they had the same statement.
Exactly, yeah. Really.
You know, it didn't say anything about, I don't think it said anything about racism. It just said equality. Or it didn't say anything about police brutality. So there was that. But I will say that, like, fair enough to them for actually the Tennis United video, like, I thought that was well done. And I think it was important that they put it on their platform. Like, it wasn't just them retweeting, but it was on their platform. And Taylor Townsend was like, Francis was great, but I thought Taylor was like, that was brutal, honestly.
Yeah,
but,
or
like, every black person who listened to that, you know, related in some way. And like, and I was surprised actually, like, as with you saying that people were waking up to how black people, you know, the issues they face on a day-to-day basis. Like, I saw like a lot of people who were like surprised by the things that Taylor was saying, and it's just, that's just like, that's just like basic reality.
Exactly. You know?
And on the final thing, sorry, I'm rambling, but
no,
like with Gauff, like I agree as well that she got a lot of like adoration, and you know, people were saying she's a future leader. She's, you know, she's so great. But yeah, a 16 year old shouldn't be standing up. Marching, you know, listing names of dead black people, like, what, you know, that shouldn't be happening. And yeah, I think people need to like understand that as well.
That's the bit that annoyed me the most. Grown ass women and men out here cheering, like, yeah, congratulations. It's like, are you not ashamed of yourself that you haven't done nothing? She can't even vote. She can't even do the most. And you're out here congratulating her for doing something that you're meant to be doing yourselves for her generation and the generation after. Like, they really thought, they were like, wow, all these long texts, like, wow, such an inspiration. I was just like, shut up. That's not cute.
Yeah.
But to be honest with this whole thing, Like, I didn't expect anything from the ATP or WTA. That's why I wasn't annoyed.
Me too.
I wasn't annoyed. Wow. I wasn't upset because I didn't expect a tweet from them, not from them, even the tennis players, even the big three. I didn't expect nothing from these people because these type of things, they don't care or they always dodge it. Even if, you know, during their conference and stuff and you ask them these type of questions, I'll never forget, Federer had like a question regarding one of the companies that sponsors him and stuff. And I think their company has something to do with like the bushfire in Australia.
Okay.
And someone must have asked him a question about them. And the way he flipped it, and I was like, this guy is a genius. And this is why they are trained to literally, you know, like pretend like nothing is there and they're still cool and they're neutral and everything and stuff. But you look at the lack of diversity in general in tennis, from even just gender and then race, these type of things shouldn't really shock you, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
I wasn't like as annoyed at anything. I was more annoyed when I realized all players tweeted the box at the same time.
Yeah, shocking.
I was like, you lot must think that I am stupid. That's what really pissed me off, is that I prefer you not tweeting anything, not posting anything, than you literally using, because if you think about it, the death of a black man started this whole thing.
Yeah.
So you use that to literally post something to make yourself feel good. Does that actually even make any sense? That's the bit that really made me upset.
On the Federer point you brought up, that's a great point as well, because I want to say I remember that press conference at the Australian Open during the whole bushfire thing. Yeah. Yep. But what that shows as well is like, and I know it's like a buzzword at the moment, white privilege. Like Federer has that in abundance, because if that was Serena, say for instance, like in terms of like talking about race, Serena, she would not have the luxury to like shut it down, because she almost kind of, there's almost like this expectation that you have to speak about it because you're black.
Exactly. Whereas, and that is why I feel like that's why a lot of white people are missing out. Yeah. They don't understand there's a huge difference if you stand up and speak about race with sense, and if I stand up and speak about race. That's why you have people out here doing all white lives matter and stuff.
Yeah.
And that is why also I like the fact that Venus took her time to post something really meaningful rather than just posting a box and keep it going, because a lot of people were out here like, I ain't Venus, like what she's doing and stuff. But look at her, she put something and you're probably in tears, and don't ever question my goat again.
You know Venus, like in the past she did all lives matter questions like a couple of years ago, and I think people held that against her like the whole time.
Really? I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, she did, like it must have been in like Asia, like maybe like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I'm sure it was like her not being like, she did not want to answer questions. I mean, I don't know if you've seen her recent press conferences, but they tend to be like, when she doesn't want to answer questions, she doesn't.
Whenever you hear her, like her conferences or like her interviews, that one word answers, like, yeah. Like, this woman does not want to talk to you guys at all. I feel like both of the Williams sisters don't like any of these conference stuff anyways, but Venus is not like,
she doesn't care, she'll literally show you
like, I don't want to be here, F off.
Yeah. Yeah, and another thing as well, I don't want to, did you have more to say to me on that?
No, go on.
I don't want to bash like the white players basically, but I did think it was very telling, like the lack of, well, yeah, like just interaction as well with Francis Tiafoe's tweet.
No, bash them.
I'm gonna give credit to like Stanislas Wawrinka. I can't stand saying his surname, but he actually retweeted it. He's like the, I want to say maybe the most well-known player, or like most high-achieving player, to like actually acknowledge it, like, and give it that kind of credibility in terms of the retweet. Because I think if a Federer retweeted it, or Nadal or Djokovic, like that would have been huge as well, like to kind of show that, listen, we hear you, we're with you, like in this fight, rather than just post a black box. Like, so that also bothered me. But I'm still more like mad at the ATP and WTA for like the lack of, just it's like they're almost too scared to like touch the issue, and I just think that's telling of the sport, like, because the sport is predominantly white, so it's like they're clearly
not, and I won't be surprised, that's how they want to keep it. All I'm saying is when Serena got what she went through, that whole Indian Wells thing, they left her to dry over there. But then when she was like, I'm back, they were all open arms because they knew that ticket will be selling. Yeah. So that's the thing. When they need us, that's when they knock on our door. When we actually need their help, that's when they leave us alone. But it's cool. But it's okay. It's all right. And Anastasia as well, speaking of players who actually spoke, she spoke out. She did like a TikTok video and explaining like white privilege and stuff. And basically to use their voices, so shout out to her. But the rest of the players, there was actually even an incident as well with Nadal.
No, what do you mean?
All I'm saying is when he posted his black box, you know, someone dropped like anytime someone posted their black box, someone actually posted like a link to donate.
Reply, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you know, on Twitter, you can click on a thing to see who's hidden the replies.
No, like, I didn't know that.
Well, it looks like Nadal or his PR, his fans, as his fans were saying, his PR was are the ones responsible for hiding the link to donate.
Wow, okay, yeah. That's poor.
And then his PR came out, like Ben Rothenberg tweeted about it, and his PR jumped in the mentions and said that it was a mistake, basically. But
interesting.
Wow, so you can literally hide so many things, but to donate, you're not hiding.
Yeah, that's poor. Yeah. That's poor. I mean, you all know, like, race relations in Spain, like, not the greatest. I'm just pulling it out there. Like, I'm not saying anything or excusing anybody.
All I'm saying
anybody,
is,
but
if you are in Spanish like him, then boy, to believe me, that is not a mistake. They said, we are not donating £1 to these people.
No, but yeah. I think, again, like you mentioned it to me, Taylor Townsend, like she was so real in that video.
She's a real one. Yeah, she's a real
like,
one.
And like you said, I don't think they were expecting her to be like that honest and like, yeah, like just forthright. And I really appreciate that because that's not just a tennis specific thing. Like that's black people in all walks of life. Like there's something in there you can relate to. It was very, very powerful and impactful. So like shout out to her. Also, what I want to say as well, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Game Set Chat, I think it's a podcast, but that's with Chanda Rubin and Zena Garrison. So they had like it's like a conference, like an open like kind of conference town hall, they called it. And on that conference or town hall was Andrew Krasny, who's like a tennis like presenter, American, obviously James Blake, the GOAT, the legend, Billie Jean King. LZ Granderson, who's like a CNN sports journalist, and Kamal Murray, who's Sloan Stephens' coach. And in this like chat, it was, I want to say it was like nearly 2 hours long, but it was so informative because they weren't just talking about like, they were really addressing like racism in society. They didn't really touch on it too much in tennis, which I was kind of slightly disappointed about. But
why don't they do that? This is my issue. I feel like when it comes to race and stuff or race issues, like in tennis in general, I feel like no one, it's a subject I don't want to really talk about. That's why in one of our episodes we were both saying how we feel like because Serena and Venus did that whole chat thing with Naomi on her channel, and you know, we were both saying how we feel like it's not till they retire they might speak a bit more about this type of stuff, because Naomi asked obviously about, you know, race issues because she's always been vocal about that. So you see how vocal she is, for example, in her industry. I really wish more people in tennis were that vocal.
I think
non-black people,
sorry,
you mean white people, non-black people.
White, I feel like both white and black. But again, you have to think about, you know, for example, Naomi, she posted that meme where she was saying her age and whenever she's about to tweet and stuff. So maybe it's because of that as well, money thing. Maybe that as well. But I really do wish, you know, people were a bit more vocal. But then again, maybe they're just like me. Sometimes there are times where you're not bothered because you're like, it's not going to change anything.
So sad.
So like, you may see how everyone right now is, you know, like calling out their workplace for not speaking up or anything and stuff. And for example, I didn't bother to, because I was like, you know what, I actually prefer if you guys didn't do anything, because if I come up and complain, you're only doing it because I came up and complained. You did not say, you know what,
genuine. Yeah,
I work for black healthcare, so we have a lot of, you know, black and other races, you know, working in healthcare and stuff in the UK especially. So it's like, you're meant to be doing this type of stuff, but I was like, you know what? No. So I don't know, but I do wish that more people were more vocal. Maybe if we had a little bit more black players, which is what we're trying to do here, get more black people.
Indeed.
So
it's also more black journalists that ask them the questions. And I think like Taylor actually talked about that when she said that, you know, normally it's just, that's just life. Like go into a tournament and someone check in all your bags and everything. Mm. You know, you just kind of get used to it and move on quickly because that's, you know, it's not going to change. But when you sit down and think about all of it and have time to stop, then that's when she's kind of now willing to speak out more.
Yeah,
but yeah. I agree.
No, yeah. I really appreciate all that. Like that's such, again, like we don't hear this enough because there aren't, and we're going to touch on this in the next segment, but yeah, there aren't enough like black tennis journalists out there, you know, addressing these issues as well, which is something that is like telling of society in as a whole, to be fair. So yeah, like now it does seem, and I'm going to keep saying, even though I'm not going to see the change in my lifetime, but I think for like my kids and grandkids, I think that's when they will see like proper like change. Like they won't really know the extent of like, and not to say that we've been through it like in our time, because obviously things were a lot worse, like, you know, decades ago, but yeah, I think things are going to continue to improve. And I think we're at a time now where it's like people are really looking to like make proper change, and it's not just chat. So, but again, there's still a lot of work to be done. So we can't get too excited, but
yeah,
things are looking up. So I don't know if you guys have anything like closing to say on that before we move on.
On like going back to the TFO video, there was another like small incident, let's say, where after Federer posted the box, you know, Gauff jumped in his mentions on Instagram and Twitter and posted links to make them actually useful, to make the black box useful.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like within a day or two, it was gone. Like she did, and so it's hard to say whether it was Coco who deleted it or if it was her team, because you know she's on Federer.
Same management. Yeah,
so, yeah. Like,
I remember that. Yeah.
So like it's just like for me again, like given that your agency has this 16-year-old black girl who's been so vocal on these things, who has like a video that went viral, and you couldn't even retweet that, you know, or your agency couldn't even retweet that. I think like very disappointing.
No, that's poor. Very, it is.
And that, as someone who's like Lucy, my expectations are the floor. Like I don't know anything. But still,
it would have, yeah, it would have been, especially people like, that's what I'm saying, like the big three, it's like a lot of people did not even ask them to even donate. They were like, yo, drop a link, because you have like millions of followers and stuff, like do something. Do you get what I mean? You know, they play in a sport where you have to be really selfish.
No, big time.
They're selfish people in general. I don't know.
I think, again, one last thing. Again, I don't want to be that guy who's like, oh, but they're doing this. So Novak Djokovic, this is, you told me this. You told me about this, Lucy. Novak Djokovic and his foundation, the tweet they put out. Like, because when I like looked into it properly, they've literally spent time to research like proper resources where you can like buy books for your kids about race and like, you know, introduce your kids to, well, yeah, the issue of racism from a very young age. And I think for someone from like Serbia, Eastern Europe, to be that kind of considerate and almost, to me, there's a lot more power in that than like
100%
like white people joining in the Black Lives Matter marches, because
I think it's stuff like that we're asking.
This is what I'm saying. The work needs to be done literally by white people. So I think that was really, really like powerful, like from Djokovic's foundation to do that.
One of his fans I was obviously like agreeing with Collins, because she was complaining about Djokovic saying that we should cancel the US Open because they need money and stuff, and I was like, yeah, she's right. And when a Djokovic fan came inside my mentions, and then I looked at his profile, I was like, Djokovic fan and you're Serbian, you're gonna call me a hard n-word, I'm out of it. I did not even reply back.
Oh god.
At all.
I wouldn't have bothered as well, but yeah guys, we can talk about this topic for so long, but yeah, there's still, like we said, a lot of work to be done, but I want to say things are looking up, but yeah, we continue to fight. So yeah, the next segment now, our main segment, to be fair. Tamani, we're going to be talking about you, so it's all the spotlight's on you for now. No, but listen, like I said, I've been looking forward to this episode for like the longest time, so I'm just really grateful to have you on like with us. And like me personally, you're someone I kind of like really admire and like, yeah, like just appreciate, because there aren't many black tennis journalists out there. And I want you to kind of speak to that as well. But I always obviously read your articles. Obviously you write for The Guardian now. But I remember reading your stuff on like the ITF's website and, you know, all the stuff you're doing with like Davis Cup and like Fed Cup and stuff as well. And yeah, like it was just always, obviously being black, like it resonated, because it's when you kind of read stuff coming from another black person, it's like much more relatable, if that makes sense. Like, and I think only we kind of know how that feels, basically. So yeah, if you could just talk a bit about like your journey into tennis first and foremost.
Yeah, well, so yeah, I mean, it's a long story, but I used to play tennis like from when I was a child, and you know, played all the time, and then I hurt my back when I was like 15 and I couldn't really play regularly anymore. And so I love tennis and I always watched it, so I wanted to write. I just decided to make a blog and write about it. This must have been like 10 years ago, in 2010. And so I made a blog and just randomly decided to go to a tournament, like just because I wanted to. I went to Linz, the WTA event, and then from there just started going to different tournaments, like a few a year, like just staying in like Ryanair flight, staying in hostels, like I didn't have any money.
Wow. So,
yeah, but from there, like just people saw my work and I met people in there and started to get actual, you know, paid work like here and there. And then like the big kind of change for me was when I started to work for Eurosport. That was in like 2014. So I took like 2 gap years and then I went to uni. And just as I started uni, that's when I started working for Eurosport. So those first days were just like, obviously when they ask you to work for them, you say yes. But like, the first thing I did was in Australian Open. And it was like, obviously like 12 a.m. it starts in Australia. So I had to like, and in January you have exams in uni. Like that was my first year. So I went to uni in Chester, and so outside of London, and they're in London. So like during January, I was just like, I'd be at the Eurosport office from 12 a.m. to like 2 p.m., 3 p.m.
Wow.
Just go straight to the train, go to Chester. The next morning I'd have an exam. Then I'd come and then finish my exam, jump on a train, come back to London. Like, I'll never forget like those 2 weeks, because I obviously wasn't going to say no. And then from there, like, I worked for them and I started writing working at Slams. And then, I graduated from uni. And then from there, that's when you probably saw, like, that's when I started doing stuff for the ITF. Like, by then, I'd built up enough, like, contacts, and I kind of knew what I needed to do. So for, like, the 18 months after uni, I think from, like, 2018, that's when I just started just trying to build up some kind of freelance, you know, working in as many places as possible for as many people. And then, yeah, and then in July of last year, that's when, like, I'd written a few things for The Guardian, and that's when they asked me to like work for them. So yeah, it's a long, like, weird story.
No, it's incredible, man.
No, that's actually crazy. First of all, congratulations for graduating, because when you said that whole January, I was like, did he leave or did he continue? So I have to give it to you for keep on going, because I was even just, I had a part-time job in London, and only the weekends I had to go back and forth, and I find that difficult. So I don't know how, I have to give it up to you for, you know, I don't know how you did that.
Like in uni, they used to call me Ghost, because I'd just go away whenever. It was like one French Open where I studied history and Spanish, so I spent a year in Spain, and so I had it was in June and the French May and June, and that's when exams are. Well, I had during the French Open, like 2016, I had an exam on the first Monday and the second Monday, so both times I went back to Spain,
back again.
And everyone was just like, everyone at the tennis was just like, what's wrong with you? You're crazy.
I've got a few questions just off the back of that. So the blog you started, is that still up? Like, is there?
No.
It's really good to see some of that work, that archive work.
It was called Football, and it was just like
Football. That's a nice name. I like that.
Yeah, it was cool. Like it had like nice. I got someone I knew to make a nice graphic and stuff. And
it was a proper website then, not a blog.
No, it was a blog really. Okay, but it was cool. Like it had this.
The way he said, "Oh, he was like, nah, I don't want you to see that." Before you finish it, he was like, "No, relax."
No, but it took
a while to like. Because I didn't have any writing background or anything, it took a while for me to like figure out my voice and just what I wanted to do. I'll never forget like one time, like a fellow journalist, and like this was like just him being honest, and I needed that. He was like, maybe you should. He saw one of my pieces, and they were like, maybe you should get. You need to do some creative writing like classes.
But your degree, you said it was history and Spanish.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of writing in history.
Yeah, yeah, but I started before. So I started the blog in sixth form.
So
17. So yeah, I didn't know what I was doing, but finally, like bit by bit, like
you. I really like how you flipped it. How you know you couldn't play anymore, and you didn't just give it up and be like, you know what, let me just leave that and just go into, I don't know, IT or something. Mm. But you literally still carried it on, because I've always said it's very important to make sure that you do what you love. I feel like your drive even at work and your motivation is even different, and you don't feel like you're waking up just to pay bills. You're waking up to do what you actually enjoy. So that's really great.
How long were you at Eurosport for?
From 2014 until 2014 until like 2017.
Okay,
so that was like my final year. So I actually had to go to class because I didn't want to fail.
Of course. Yeah. So you weren't going to tournaments, like as in, or were you just doing everything literally from like TV?
No, I did, the first year was just in the office, and then after that, like I started to travel to slams.
Nice.
But in those days it was like all on my own dime. But the good thing is like at slams, that was when it started to like make financial sense to be if you got there, then I could make money to make it worthwhile.
No, that's incredible. And like, this is the thing, like, again, you going back to what Lucy said, like you kind of made this happen for yourself, like literally starting the blog and then kind of paving your own kind of way. Like, was there anyone you kind of looked up to or like aspired not to be like, but yeah, like maybe looked up to say, oh yeah, like this is someone I can maybe try and follow? Or
no, in terms of like their route, like I read a lot, and so there's a lot of journalists that I like, this journalist and otherwise, and so I look up to them. I try to speak to people sometimes, and even just like small things, like there was a period where like when I was working for Eurosport, and I was always like, was not scared, but like weary of like, say, pitching to a certain, like The Guardian, for example. Of course, I didn't pitch to them until last year. That was the first time I ever pitched to them, because I thought like I needed to be a better writer. The idea that I was pitching needed to be perfect, or then they would reject it and they'd never respond to an email again. I had like those fears. So like just speaking to different people and learning about their perspective. Like the one thing I'll never forget is when I talked to one journalist, I won't say who it was, but like, they were explaining to me that like, you know, that like their writing is just insane, and they were explaining to me like when they were writing this piece or these pieces, and they didn't like, they had writer's block, they didn't know if it was good, you know, they had no confidence in it, and then you look at the piece and it's just insane. So and then you realize that like everyone has the same like doubts and all of that stuff, and you know, it's just about pushing through. And you know, if you don't send that email, or you know, send that text or call, then you know that that's the only way you're definitely not gonna be able to get that piece, you know.
No, exactly. It kind of brings me back to like getting you on the pod, because I was thinking, oh, is he gonna respond to my DM? But no, I mean, thank God you did. And yeah, also like, because you played tennis, like you said, like as a kid, and so did I. So I know in terms of like the demographic of the game, like a very white sport, like, and that's literally throughout, like no matter what level you kind of play at. Like did that, clearly it didn't, but did that ever play on your mind, like the fact that, oh, I'm literally going to be writing about an all-white sport, and like I'm a black writer? Like
not really. Mainly because like my route into the sport was the Williams sisters, and like I'm playing tennis, like I'm from South London, and so the club I played at, like it was like a small group of us who were like the same level, and it was, I mean, me, it was like another black guy, and like that it was like it was diverse. Like when we go to other tournaments and stuff, like we tended there were very few other black people.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, I don't know. I know that that's kind of how it goes. Like you know, there are always going to be places where sometimes you're the only black person in the room, and it's, you know, it sucks. But like you just have to make sure that when you're there, you help people afterwards.
Move up, yeah. I feel like us black tennis fans, we just suck it up and just, you know, yeah. I feel like we've just gotten so used to it, because even if you watch old videos, all you see is white people. And even now when you watch, you know, like the fans and stuff, when you're watching a match, all you're seeing is a bunch of white people. Like you literally get excited when you see a black person. So and again, this is one of the things that I really wish it changes. I feel like it should be a sport for all races and for
it will
everyone.
Change.
And
it's just going to take a while.
It will change, because you're seeing a little bit more, you know, black players coming up, and I'm seeing more black people being, you know, interested in it as well. Like we were saying in the last episode, how a lot of people were doing saying the memes when they found out that Naomi was, you know, the highest paid female athlete. People were like, yeah, we're going to be a tennis family, you know, forget about basketball, we're going to make money, you know, all of these things. Like, if that's what we have to do to get black people coming in, then so be it. Let's do that.
Indeed. Is it fair to say then, Tamini, you're literally like the only black British tennis journalist in the country?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like there are very few tennis journalists in general, but yes, I'm the only. I'd say like of tennis journalists in general, like in the slams, it's me and French journalist Carol Bouchard,
who introduced me to.
Aside from that, I mean, like when you go, like there are some American journalists who will drop in from time to time, and at the US Open, like that's always cool, because there's like a small group of them, and you know, I mean, you know how it is when you're the only black people in the room.
It's congregated.
Yeah.
you give
yourself that little.
The nod, the nod.
By day three, you're best friends, you know.
But that's so crazy how you say that. Like, it's actually so insane to say that, you know, like you and Carol, like one of the few, you know, black journalists in tennis. Like, I haven't really taken it in like that, because obviously I was aware of you and Carol, but that was it. But I thought it was a thing where I just didn't really know. I actually thought at least maybe there's more, but it just shows you, like,
There's the North African journalist Reem Abuleo.
Is she like Tunisian or something? Well, Moroccan or something.
Egyptian.
Okay.
So like, but aside from that, I mean, there are very few. I mean, there are more women now, but like, even that, you know, it's an old boys club in the past.
Do you think that's going to change like anytime soon?
I don't know. I don't, like, it's weird, because just tennis journalism in general, is just in a weird spot where, I mean, people are losing jobs, right? Although there are like some publications have like, schemes for minorities and stuff. Like we're at a point where, I don't know, it's just a tough period for journalism. So I find it hard to even think of like there being more people. It's also a job where people tend to stay in it for a long time. I told you I've been going to these press rooms for almost 10 years now, but I'm still one of the youngest people. I'm still the youngest person normally.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not like,
I mean, it kind of shows, because sometimes some of the questions some of the other journalists ask, not you, but some of the other journalists ask, you just know that it's just like, oh, get out.
I'm saying nothing.
I hear you completely.
Anyways, I'm taking it. I'm just saying, guys, I've been saying it for the longest.
No, because that's something I want to like speak to you about. To me, like, you know, obviously you don't have to name names, but again, like, how does that make you feel? Because I remember, I think it was it was Wimbledon last year, obviously Coco Gauff's breakout year tournament. I just loved hearing you. Whenever it came to you, like, pitching your question, like, I got excited because I knew the question was going to be good. And also I knew it was so easy to see and hear that Coco was also really engaged, like, with you. Like, do you kind of get that as well? Like, you get this kind of sense.
I think, like, I mean, I always try to, like, think about how I would react. And, you know, clearly if you're like sitting on the podium, like watching, speaking to the press, and there's like a sea of white faces and two black people, you know, you're going to be, I don't know, 100%. You're going to be happy to see them and happy when they're asking me questions. And also, I think just in general, obviously, because I'm younger, like I kind of have an idea of like, I know what, when she's talking about things. So like, I'm back in at Wimbledon, I remember I asked her about like Jaden Smith. Everyone else in the room probably was like, who is this person? So like, that's the cool thing about like being black and also being younger and just understanding like what they're saying. Naomi as well, like, so yeah.
Because I was going to say, like, who would be like you said, you've been in this 10 years deep already, which is a long time. Like, you must have like favorite players that you like to kind of speak to or like interview. Like, could you name any? Or
I mean, I like Garth since she's been here. I like Osaka. I like Andrea Petkovic.
I was telling Lucy about Petkovic the other day. She also put a really like thoughtful,
that was really nice
tweet. Yeah,
she's I think I mean, they're like, some people are closed and that's just they don't want to say anything, but I think a lot of people are also, you know, that they're quite open. And if I think the main thing is just like speaking to them as humans. Yeah. Like, obviously, as a journalist, like sometimes when they do certain things, you have to ask them questions that they won't like. But when that's not the case, I think you just have to, like now, like before we came on, you were like, this is not an interview, this is a conversation. Like, you have to like just have that thing where they're happy to speak to you, happy to open up. And, you know, like if they see you in the hallway, they're not going to be like looking in the sky, you know.
What would you say, like, or have there been any, I'm guessing there probably are a few, but like career highlights, like if you had to maybe select a few, like what stands out to you so far as being like, oh my god, like this is a real moment for me? Like,
I think probably like just the first time like I went to Wimbledon, like that was the first time I went to in 2015. And like, obviously, like I told you, I'm South London, and like I have, like at Wimbledon, I'm not that South London, but I have a friend who lived around there, like really close to Wimbledon, in a nice house. And so a lot of my like memories were like after going out and having a hangover, like walking past, because like, it was like right next to Wimbledon, right next to the tournament. Okay. So I'd walk past the big walls of Wimbledon, the green walls, and like always looking over and thinking about it. So like when I finally got there and was like kind of part of it, I think that was good, and like seeing all the people that
had you ever been there before, like as a fan, like to watch?
Since I was young, I've done like the queuing and stuff quite like when I was younger a lot. So yeah, nice. I've been there a few times, but just like I think also I'd say the other thing was also maybe 2017 Australian Open, just seeing Serena versus Venus and then Federer and Nadal, like
never
would have thought,
but like, finals
because like you just and that was there. I was like, you know, I'm here, like, but you wouldn't expect, like I would have assumed that they'd all be retired by now, you know. These are the people I watched growing up, so like to see the same finals in person was just like, you know, the finals I was watching in 2005, you know, 2002. So that was cool, but I don't know, I don't have many highlights. I feel like I hope they're in the future because I'm not old yet.
Fair enough. That's an honest like assessment. We didn't really touch on it, but yeah, like did you have any players you kind of aspired to be like when you were playing, like players you looked up to and like tried to maybe imitate?
I'd say Venus and Serena. But also like male players would be like, because they were just like my route in, so that was the first people I watched. So I tried to like copy Serena's serve. That was
well, to be fair, that is legendary.
And but that, like the other players was like Safin and Agassi. I'd say about Safin and Agassi.
So similar, like similar to me, I guess. Like for me, and this isn't about me, but I remember when I was playing as a junior. Obviously, I love Serena's technique. Like her technique is literally A1 when it comes to serving. But I loved like Andy Roddick just because of the speed. So I actually got Babolat rackets because of Andy Roddick. Like, so that's, it's funny when I tell people, and he's someone I kind of did look up to, and also Leighton Hewitt, which is kind of weird considering some of his like views, but we won't get into that.
This is what I like about tennis, because it's not every sport you hear a guy saying this female player is one of the reasons why I like the I like the sport alone, or even wish I could play like them. So that's a luck that we have, because you will never get a male football player saying they want to play like the American American
captain. One day. You, to be fair, times are changing. Yeah, it's true.
Times are changing, but you know, the fact that we already have that in tennis, you know, when it comes, like you look at the top 10, you know, most paid female players, 90% of them are literally, like, I think up to 9 or 8, they're all tennis players. Mm. Even the top 20, the rest of them as well, most of the athletes taken over are tennis players. So tennis is where it's at, guys. Come bring your black kids here.
That's what I think people don't understand that, like, when, like, like recently it's been a talk about the ATP WTA merger and stuff, like people always compare them, but like if you look at WTA tennis compared to other women's sports, like they're at the top
completely.
Everyone else is like miles away. Like it's kind of almost like miraculous in the way that they've managed to, you know, be at this level. And I think in the perspective of a journalist, like you have, you know, as a journalist, you have, it's the only sport where you have to cover both, you know. You know, you're not just covering Arsenal or whatever. You have to cover the men's and the women's. Like, I know it's not like a lot of times it gets less, and it there should be more coverage of the women and stuff, but like nobody's a men's tennis journalist. That doesn't exist in the world. So I think that's cool.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, as much as we complain, well, I complain a lot, especially as a woman myself, about certain things, is that we do have a little bit of the luck. So I can still talk about female players to a male tennis player, to a lot of male tennis players, whereas, you know, I feel like with other sports, a lot of people don't really have, you know, that luck. But since we're there, you know, if that's the case, then it should just make all tournaments, you know, equally paid and stuff. Just saying.
Well, the Grand Slams are, to be fair. The Grand Slams are.
That's what I'm saying. The other tournaments.
No, I hear that. I hear that. On that as well, Tamini, like, so do you, clearly you probably don't, but in terms of popularity, I think you could argue and say that the men's game is kind of looked at more favourably than the women's game. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think so, yeah. I think it's partly also, I mean, we've just had, and God knows, who knows when it's going to end, but Federer and Nadal and Djokovic, like, doing their thing, you know, over the time they've built their brands, and, you know, everyone, you know, they've built up their fame, and everyone knows, like, I mean, they've built a lot of the popularity of the tour.
Mm.
And so definitely the men's game is, at the moment, it's more profitable, there's more money and all of that stuff. I'm really curious about what happens, like, afterwards.
That's what I'm going to say, because I want to go lead on to that. So, because I think, and you kind of said it as well, like in terms of women's tennis and men's tennis, women's sport now, like tennis is literally like far ahead of like most other sports when it comes to like women being on like an equal playing field in terms of, you know, coverage and stuff. So I don't know how you feel about the merger, but I personally feel like it wouldn't really benefit like women's tennis, if that makes sense, like to merge, because I think they would almost get lost like in the men's game in terms of like the coverage and like just the focus basically. Like, so I kind of like the fact that the WTA, although I'm mad at them at the moment, but yeah, the WTA kind of stand alone, like, and quite strongly, like, as their own kind of like entity, like, if that makes sense. I don't know how do you feel about the merger. Like, you think it would be a good thing?
I mean, I don't know. I think certainly they should, I think you're completely right that they have their own power, and they should, like, if whatever happens, they should make sure that is protected. That, because we've seen, like, I mean, at Slams, you see kind of how, you know, the WTA players, you know, particularly historically, like, men's players will get on the bigger courts and all of that stuff. You go to, like, a tournament like Eastbourne in England, where the women's event is bigger and the female players are more popular, but it will be even equal or sometimes even fewer women on the main courts or whatever. So I think definitely they have to be wary of that. I'm also, you know, the fact that it was brought up by Federer and then Nadal responded, I think that's like, those are alarm bells, I think. So I don't even know, like, it's, at the moment, it's still just talk, and
And what did I say? Mm-hmm. We brought this up a couple of episodes before, and believe me or not, I am a huge fan of Federer. He's my goat.
She did have, yeah, put that disclaimer out there very early.
I did come for him because I felt like that whole talk was just some clout thing. Like, he was bored at home and just said, let me just pick up my phone and let me just, you know, do the good guy thing. Because it's like, come on, like, I don't know. Because now, look, he's spoken about it. And what has happened?
Silence.
It's quiet. We're not hearing any noise anymore. So that's what I'm saying. It was just a time we just want to, you know, just want to talk just for talking, because if everything was going as normal, no one would have said anything. But if he was going to speak up and actually, you know, do something about, have a meeting or speak to, like, actually about his words, then yeah, feel free. But if you're not going to do anything,
No, I hear that. I completely hear that. Just, yeah, quickly on like the whole WTA and like just tournaments in general, like, and ATP, I guess. I don't know how you feel, Tamani, about this current suspension of the tour. Like, I think the proposed date to come back is the 1st of August.
Yeah.
So, like, you being in the industry, like, is that realistic, basically? Like, is that a thing? Like, are we going to... We don't know.
No. So I think at the moment it's just... still don't know, but I think what they're trying to do is just... either the US Open, start with the US Open whenever that's, I can't remember the date, like the end of August.
Yeah.
Or Cincinnati and the US Open, which would be like 4 weeks from mid August to mid September. But even that's like, I mean, as we talked about already, even that's up in the air. And yeah. I'm not, I'd say the likeliest thing is starting from Madrid, which is, I guess, like early to mid September. I don't know the date,
and that'd be on clay, obviously, like, Madrid.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, it's we'll know tomorrow, like
of course. Monday. Yeah, true, but... very true. Yeah. So back to you now. So,
oh no.
Yeah, no, players, like, because you cover the sport literally daily. Like, so, are there any players out there that, like, maybe, and black players I'm talking about specifically now, that you maybe can, like, yeah, maybe say, this is someone we can look out for, like, in the future, like, you know, but they haven't won anything yet, but they're coming. Like, are there any players that kind of stand out to you? Kind of put you on the spot there.
Yeah.
Sorry. <no. laughs> Apologies.
No problem. I mean, I think we're going to talk about him, but Felix, but that's like someone who's already, I don't know, younger players.
Big fan of Felix.
Yannick Sinner's a big one for me.
Okay.
I really like him.
The Italian won
ATP finals last year, and like, he's just an amazing, like, clean ball striker.
You know, I'm gonna reword that then. So scrap the black players. Like, yeah, just young players in general. Both male and female.
Hey, Dr. Uma just entered the chat. What do you mean scrap the black players? What do you mean scrap the black? This is a black spin global, okay? Not a white spin global.
For the men, I'd say Sinner's like the big one right now. I'll have to think, see about the rest.
Yeah.
From the women, I mean, I can say a black player. I really like Robin Montgomery.
Oh,
like
big fan. Yeah.
Same age as... you should try and get her on the podcast.
I'd love to, because she got quite far at the Australian Open, didn't she? The juniors.
Yeah,
she got to the semis.
She won Orange Bowl, I think.
Yeah.
She was really good. I interviewed her.
I read that interview. That was
crazy.
Brilliant.
Like, she got really like dark. Like, I wasn't. I thought it was going to be a really nice interview, and then she was talking about how she, when she was traveling alone, and she hated it and she wanted to go home.
So but mature, yeah, though, like, I got, like, she was really mature, like,
yeah.
for her age.
I'd say her. I'm looking forward to this, since this is a black tennis podcast. I interviewed recently a player called two African players, one called Kolawai Monsi.
Oh, yeah, he follows on Insta. Shout out to South African, yeah.
As well.
Indeed.
he was really cool. Like, I spoke to him, and he was, yeah, he's cool. And the other one is Eliakim Koulibaly, who's from Ivory Coast.
Yeah, I saw him at the Australian Open as well, juniors.
So, I'm they're together, they both reached the top 20, and that's the first time two African players that have made it.
And they're both representing South Africa and Ivory Coast.
Yeah, South Africa and Ivory Coast.
That's sick. Love that.
And so I spoke to both of them. I'm waiting for the piece. It's been ages. I'm still waiting for it to come out. But so it was like,
would that be in the Guardian?
Yeah, yeah.
Wicked. That
was really cool. Like, normally I don't, but obviously it would be really cool to see two African players at the top of the sport.
Because this is what I'm saying. Like on our last pod, we had Rodney Rapson on, and he's the the founder of that Exo Tennis series. Like he kind of that was his idea basically, and he's an Asian Australian. But yeah, we were talking, obviously being on the Black Spin podcast, we were talking about black tennis players and interest in the sport. And he said basically what you just said there about until there's a black player coming from Africa and actually representing that country. We're not going to see real progress pretty much, because all the black players right now, even though they're doing great things, but they're representing Great Britain, America, France, so until we have an African, that is when we're going to see proper change. And hopefully, like you just said, with the interview you did.
And the thing is, us black people, we don't need a lot of time. We are trendsetters. So if we say tennis is the best sport, tennis is going to be the best.
It's only a matter of time.
The only thing, we just need more representation. That's it. From players to coaches to
media,
empires to journalists to literally everywhere. We just need more black people just everywhere in tennis in general, not just the players alone. And I think once we have that, but by you guys just naming all of these young black players, it just shows you that's one of the reasons why I really focus more on the next generation, because these lots, like I said before, they're getting old. Before you know it, they're retiring and they're gone. And I feel like we really need to start focusing more on the younger players and stuff. And it's their time, man. I'm getting a bit bored of the big threes winning slams. I can't wait for the first person to beat that.
I can't believe you say Federer is your GOAT, but you're getting bored of the big three. That's crazy.
No, because it just excites you. I like a little bit of drama.
it's been so long, right?
What are your views on that? You don't have to, you feel free to, in terms of the big three, because I'm personally bored. I've been bored with the big three. I'm a big Andy Murray fan, though. Let's not get it twisted. I love Andy Murray.
He's an Andy Murray stan account. 100%.
Love Andy Murray, but yeah,
I think what they're doing is crazy, because we just wouldn't have thought that. And but at the same time, of course, it's the same thing over and over again. And
so who's your favorite out of them three?
I don't have favorites. Honestly, I'm sure people wouldn't expect that, but I actually really, I really enjoyed the fact that Djokovic came and just made it.
Were you taking the time to talk? I was like, this is
you're gonna kick me off this podcast, but no, I enjoy seeing people angry. I don't know why. I just enjoy.
No, it's personality,
And so I enjoy the fact that Djokovic, everyone was, they had the Federer and Nadal for so long, and people thought opposites, the two best players ever, and then Djokovic just came and just knocked that. Everyone's dream.
You have to give him that. I think my only issue, I just feel like he's a beg. That's just it. But besides that, he's been an amazing player. That's one thing you can't front, can't lie about. He's actually been on job. But I think it's also, he's not afraid to show his emotions that he have towards the sports.
I agree with all of that. I don't really have a favorite in, I guess you can say, in the big three, but I do, in recent times anyway, Novak has kind of shown me a different side. Even if you go
anyways,
back,
thank you for coming, guys. It's switching off.
Just quickly on that, going back to the Australian Open, this is kind of off topic, but I love the tribute he did for Kobe. I thought that was really touching, and it was I just thought, I respect that, and I'm gonna be looking out for you in a different way now, after that. But anyway, that's the big three. I think that pretty much wraps up our Tamani segment. I don't know if you have any more questions, Lucy.
No, I don't. I'm actually sad that it's over.
The podcast isn't over yet. No, not yet. But yeah, just that segment. I don't know if you have anything else if you want to maybe add anything to Tamani yourself, or
good, I think.
Any tips for aspiring black journalists that want to cover the sport?
Yeah. That's that's the thing. Like, I always, that's hard. Like, I mean, as I explained, like, my route, I didn't study journalism. I didn't have like an internship. Like, so I don't know, like the general thing is just to write as much as you can, to read as much as you can, to I mean, as I said before, like, you have to, even though like in journalism, you know, it's easiest when you know people. That's how, you know, you have to send those emails and stuff, but that still doesn't feel like helpful enough, you know, like,
yeah, you know? I think it's persistence, and obviously you can speak to that. Yeah, and like you said, just don't get downhearted if you don't hear back from people. Like, just keep plugging away. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's your story is testament to that, because you literally started off a blog, like literally off your own back, going to tournaments literally on your own, like paying for that yourself. And then obviously, because your talent, like your talent was recognized, hence why you're now at The Guardian. Like,
I'm sorry, I was gonna say, and I also think, like, on that, like, it's also helpful to know, like, I mean, when you have ideas that, you know, you can write and other people can't write, you maybe are in a niche that not everyone is in, because I mean everyone around my this age is every other person I meet on the street is probably a football journalist, you know, and that can be hard to break into, because everyone likes football. Like, I've been doing some football stuff.
I've read some of your football stuff. Yeah.
Please don't.
You're a good writer. Yeah. Like, you're a solid writer, like, across the board. So,
yeah. But I like football. I love football, but I'm always aware of the fact that, like, when I go to a football game, everyone else knows more than me. You know, because football is the national sport and all that stuff. So it does help to have either a niche in football, whether it's business or I don't know, or other sports that people would want to hear more about. You know, I think it's about, you know, being more specific and knowing that what you have can bring value, because then people can't say no, you know.
No, well said. Before we end, who's your football team? Don't upset me.
Arsenal.
Oh, God. Fair enough, I guess.
Are you Tottenham?
No, one more guess. Okay. London, one more guess. And maybe... Chelsea. Maybe
Chelsea?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know this climate ain't right for Chelsea fans right now.
When you guys were out here rooting for Novak just a couple of minutes.
This climate ain't right for black Chelsea fans at the moment, but yeah, we move on. again, Sarili, thanks a lot for that, man. Just really good insight, and again, really appreciate you joining us on this special episode, and like, hopefully you can join us again, like, in the future. Like, I want us to make this just not a one-off thing. So moving on to the final segment, or the last segment, is This Time Last Year, and obviously with no tennis going on, no ATP and WTA tennis going on anyway, a lot of exhibition tennis, which is good to see, but yeah, it was the Mercedes Cup in Stuttgart, which is a grass court event on the ATP tour, and obviously I follow that quite closely. Like, I think Felix Auger-Aliassime is in there, Gael Monfils as well, like, from a black tennis player perspective, and Dustin Brown as well. But Felix, young Felix, who was 18 at the time, he made it all the way to the final. Were you covering it, so many, or were you following it closely? Or
I was following it a bit. I think I had another thing, but I think I was doing, because obviously there's a lot of tournaments that week. But I was watching it. I saw that amazing match against Dustin,
which is the quarter final.
I think he said match point, right?
Quarter final. So, and this is the thing, that was Felix's first ever like ATP tour level grass court tournament, and he, like I said, he reached the final, which is just, again, testament to like his brilliance, like, at such a young age. But yeah, he lost in the final to Matteo Berrettini, the Italian. And I remember, obviously I was watching it thinking, finally, like, this is going to be his time. Like, I say finally, I want to say that was his second ATP tour final, I think. But yeah, basically without a title. So I was like, oh, this is going to be it. He was seeded seventh as well, and Berrettini wasn't seeded, he was unseeded. So, like, on paper, he should have really won. But obviously Berrettini's now, what, top 10? He's like 9 in the world, I think. So, yeah, really good, like, high quality match. But just in general, like just seeing Felix like play his way through that week. Like Lucy said, I'm a massive fan of his. Like, I just love his game and his attitude as well. I don't know if you want to speak a bit about, like, yeah, what you've made of him so far.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because with Felix, he's been hyped forever. You know, when he was 14, I think he was 14 years old or 15, I can't remember, but I'll never forget just watching him in one of the Challenger events where he won his first matches, and everyone was like, you know, this is the next big thing. And so that last year it was really impressive to see him, like, just how regular and routine it was, that he kind of, it looked normal for him. You know? And with that, you know, as you said, he did it this on grass. Like, last year he went to the South American Swing and, you know, built up matches there and showed he could play in clay. Then he went to Miami. Was it Miami?
Miami. He got to, the semis.
And that was, again, impressive on hard courts. And then he had another final in Lyon on clay, and then this as well. So, like, the fact that he showed in his first year that he can do all of this on different surfaces, that, you know, he's quite capable of winning matches and matches after matches, I think that was really impressive. And I mean, you said finally, it's still finally with winning a final.
True.
Lost again to Gael this year, but yeah. I mean, it's obvious that at some point he's going to win a title, and at some point 100%. He'll, you know, he's still yet to bring this form to slams, but I mean, it's going to happen. So,
because I've said many a time, and Lucy can testify, like, I think he's going to be the first black Grand Slam winner since Arthur Ashe. And I love Goa Monfils, I love Joe Wiffasonga, but yeah, we all know they're like, 33, 34. Sorry, who did I say?
Arthur Ashe.
Oh, my bad. But, yeah, Yannick Noah, my bad. Yeah, but I that's how much I believe in his ability. Like, and I don't know what slam it will be, because he's got game literally for clay, he's got game for hardcore, he's got game for grass, so it literally,
that alone shows you that he definitely will go definitely far. And
exactly.
He's still so young.
Yeah.
He seems pretty focused as well. I felt like this year was going to be his year. Like, I was really, him and Monfils were the two players I was really, really looking forward to, because Monfils as well was on job, surprisingly, but you know what I mean. I definitely have faith in Felix. Like, I feel like he's really gonna go far, definitely.
No. He's very, like as you said, he's very mature on the court, as everyone always says. So he does seem to have just a good head on his shoulders. And I mean, on the topic we're talking about, I don't know if we mentioned him, but his video, although he wasn't in the TFO video, his video when he talked about hit the race.
His dad being pulled over.
He's more related to his thing. He does, I think Eugene said last time that he donates to like where he's from, which was Cameroon or Ivory Coast.
That's Togolese. So he's doing that Felix Points for Change or something.
So he probably even have more relation to his roots, like must, like a lot of us Black British people have more relation to our roots, and same with him. So I'm not surprised if, you know, he's definitely speaking up as well and stuff. So I just I can't wait for tennis to be back.
I know. Hopefully it's soon. Like, yeah. I don't know if you guys have any like closing comments or thoughts.
What's your favorite slam? I love asking this question.
Either Wimbledon or Australian Open. Wimbledon, because it's, I mean, as I said before,
it's Wimbledon. I don't think you even need to explain if it's your favorite slam.
And Australians, like, I mean, as I'm sure everyone always says, like, it's the most advanced. It's also at the start of the year where, like, when you go there, like, everyone's happy. You know, people aren't, I know people call it the happy slam, but, like, really, people are happy to be back in tennis. It's not So people are also nicer to you. I don't know, my memory, like, of Australian Open, because most slam events are outside of the city, you know, like Wimbledon, it's in the suburb, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Australian Open's in the center of the city. So, like, whenever I finish working, like, 2 a.m. or whatever, it's always walking back home. And, it's so warm. I don't know. That's a cool song.
I did say the only reason why I'll go to Australia is just for the Australian Open, because nobody got time to be seeing kangaroos around.
They're not actually in the streets, don't worry.
It's okay. These animals are just coming in your hotel room and just seeing the next thing in your
No, Australia is nice though. If you get a chance, like that's a nice city, Melbourne.
Yeah, no, that's definitely like a bucket list thing because Australia is a trek.
What is 12-hour flight? How long's a flight?
Overall 24 to 30 hour trip overall.
Incredible, yeah. Wow, yeah.
When I first went there, like my broadcast would go, like I took Air China. So I stopped in most people go through like Dubai.
It's direct, okay.
I stopped in China and was like walking around Beijing for like 12 hours before getting on the next flight.
Oh,
listen, nothing wrong with being economical, man.
Yeah, like it's a trek. Like as you said, like it is like it's a lot to be in a plane.
It's a lot, yeah. You have to plan this a year ahead. That's what I'm saying. The day I'm going, I'm planning like a year ahead. Like I.
No, wicked, man. But yeah, guys, that brings a close to the latest edition of the Blackspin Global Podcast. So, again, Temeni, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yep.
We look forward to like continuing to read your work in The Guardian. Do you want to give your Twitter handle as well?
It's Tumcariol, TUMCARAYOL. And
worth a follow, guys. No, he's well worth a follow. So yeah, get following. Guys, we'll catch you again for another edition in just under 2 weeks' time. So thanks for listening and take care. Cheers.
Cheers.